through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
All right, we're going to have Pete Carroll coming up for you on his Zoom conference call in just a second. But we got to get back to this Pac-12 story as far as it concerns Nick Rolovich. I'm looking at the headline of an ESPN article by Adam Rittenberg. And Adam Rittenberg doesn't write the headline, so I'm not holding him responsible for this. Washington State football coach Nick Rolovich tells wide receiver Cassidy Woods joining Unity Group would create an issue. And then he writes, you know, he writes the article, he explains why, he gives the part of the transcript from the phone call in between Rolovich and Woods. But as far as I can see, the article does not clarify that Rolovich doesn't necessarily have a problem with the player being part of a Unity Group. But the problem is that if you opt out, then you might have scholarship issues. These articles and these reports make Rolovich look like he's anti-Unity Group. That's not cool. Like, I don't... By the way, he may be, but we don't know that. Okay, we haven't really heard in detail from the Rolovich camp yet. I highly doubt that he is, though. I highly doubt that a coach that was just hired in 2020... Right? Or, yeah, 2020, is going to be somebody who's going to come right out and say, no, players can't stand for what they believe in. Like, there's existing coaches out there who may feel that way. But new coaches, I'd be shocked if Washington State hired a coach who's going to be like the old Bear Bryant, my way or the highway guy. I would just be shocked if that were the case. Rolovich's issue, or when he says it's an issue to Woods, being part of this We Are United group, I don't think that he's saying, hey, that's a bad idea. I think he's saying that you're going to run it to scholarship issues. I don't think principally Rolovich has an issue with him standing up for what he believes in. What do you guys make of that? What do you think, Jake?
He's not threatening him. He's warning him. Like, that's what I take out of this. Rolovich is a good human being. Rolovich is a good person, and I feel very confidently going on the record and saying that, okay? So you also have to remember the context of this conversation is Woods called Rolovich. Woods brought this up to Rolovich on the spot. So this is a very nuanced conversation, a very nuanced answer in return, and it's a very awkward position for this head coach who's sitting here saying, gosh, I don't want to sit here and sound like I'm being this bad person saying you can't do this or can't do that. But at the same time, if you're opting out for COVID for health reasons, you're protected. If you're opting out because of your protest of everything that's going on, then that's different. Then you are going to be running into some scholarship issues here. That's just the way it is. And so I don't think that Rolovich should be demonized. I get why people have jumped to this conclusion, but I think that this is a very awkward, difficult conversation to just have the answer right on the spot, the perfect answer.
Yeah, I will say that reading the transcript of that phone call between Rolovich and Woods, it did seem to me that Rolovich was implying that the movement itself or being part of that group is a problem and that would cost him a scholarship. So it's not like he was hinting like, hey, I don't have an issue with it. You're fine. Don't worry about it. Like, there was certainly an implication there. My question is it Rolovich that's pushing that, or is he in a tough spot because of the school's policy? That's where I'm lost, because it seems clear to me in that transcript that there is some kind of problem with Woods being part of that group for reasons outside of health.
Okay, we'll come back to this later. Right now, we got Pete Carroll.
With the defensive team, at least, offensive guys will come in the afternoon, so we're finally back to the grass, which is really good to be out here. And we're in a ramp-up period, just getting started. we won't be practicing like we like to practice for days ahead here. But at this time, at least we're on the field and we're getting going and we're starting to make the process come to life. We're off to a really good start with our guys. One of the big emphases to get rolling here was coming in under a quarantine mentality. And we're very fortunate that we tested our way through it and we had very good results. And our guys have prepared themselves really well in that regard. And now as we start strength and conditioning today and get the guys actually running and doing things, we'll start to begin the evaluation process of where everybody is and how they feel and how they're the condition that they're in and where things start to fit together. So just getting started. But it feels good to get active and get out here and get out in the sunshine.
Corbin Smith.
Basket by Corbin Smith.
Hi, Pete. Last time that you spoke with us, you mentioned the possibility of Marquise Blair playing some nickel this year. Now that Jamal Adams has been added to the fold, do you envision Marquise or even Quandre potentially playing some out of the slot to get all three of those players in the field at the same time? How much flexibility does that give you schematically with three versatile athletes like that?
Yeah, we're really pumped about this, you know, this camp to figure that part out. For the most part, we have to figure out Marquise. He's the one that's going to get the opportunity to get in on the slot and do some stuff that puts him in a position to be really active and be part of the pressure packaging and some real aggressive part of the play. So that's cool for him. As we add Jamal into the program here, there's so many things that he does well that we're excited about fitting that together as we move forward. It doesn't seem like uncharted territory for me at all, you know, because I've been very fortunate and coached some really, really good safeties over the years. And I see traits of Jamal in all of those guys. He can do everything that we want a guy to do. He's most dynamic as an aggressive player, you know, where he has chances to make plays and be around the line of scrimmage and around coverage and in pressure situations. He's really good at all of that. So I'm thrilled to be putting this thing together. We won't know for some time now, but I can picture it, and I can't wait to see this come to life.
Thank you.
John Boyle.
Yeah, Pete, just to follow up on that, this is the first we've talked to you since the Adams trade. His unique talents, what does he bring to you guys in terms of playmaking ability and how can he help this defense?
You're talking about Jamal now?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, one of the things, the style of his play is that he's really aggressive. He's an attack-oriented guy. He's a guy, the kind of guys that I've seen in years past that when they see things, they don't hesitate. They go. And they're very, very decisive. And very physical and creative as well. It takes creativity to see the opportunities and then to seize those opportunities. And he's got all of that great burst, physical nature, and then also the athleticism to make the plays happen. He's really good in coverage one-on-ones. He's good in zone stuff. So it just all fits, you know. And so we're going to, you know, we had a very dynamic duo in years past, you know, when Cam and Earl were here. Those guys were entirely different players. I mean, they couldn't have been further. I mean, one guy was huge, and the other guy's a smaller guy. Just a huge difference in the talent that they brought. But yet we incorporated their stuff to hopefully, we tried to. It was the illustration of our approach to highlight the uniqueness of the players. And so that's what's going to happen here with Jamal and really. Quandre Diggs is a really dynamic player too. He showed that last year with us, and as we already pointed out, Marquise has a whole structure to his game that we love to fit in. So this is really all we could hope for, and you know, you'll see it come to life. But it really, it's about, you know, putting them in really good positions and then cutting them loose to do the things they're good at.
Thank you,
Curtis.
Hey, Pete, I'm kind of curious how you view where your cornerback situation's at now with Quentin Dunbar not able to be here with you given his legal circumstances. If you have any update on that front, I'd welcome it too. But just kind of how you see all the pieces you do have there kind of piecing together at this stage.
Okay, well, I don't have any updates for you on Quentin's situation right now. It's really it's out of our hands, and we'll see how that goes. But we're in the developmental stage of our corners' growth. You know,
I thought Shaq had a great season last year for us. Really bounced back. I thought year one and year two was there. We thought he could do better. Year three, he I thought he did a fantastic job. I thought he exploded. A playmaking, physical, count on, come through guy, all of that, big plays, all of that stuff he did. In year two for Trey, I thought also kind of maybe not as much ground we made up as I would have liked. So he comes back for us just with a whole another experience in his back pocket. I'm going to expect him to be, a matter of fact, I've already talked to him about this, be very aggressive, very physical, and make sure that we take advantage of the 2 years that he's got behind him now, and it really comes to the front. So we've got, you know, our corners are coming back, and so the competition is on, and guys will be battling for those spots. I don't want to overlook Ugo, you know, doing what he can do. He was a nice factor late in the year playing the nickel spot. He's going to be in there in the coverage situations and battling with Marquise. We're really just, like I said, in the developmental process of these guys. I mean, there's no reason to think that they're not going to get better this year and be an improved product from where we were. So we've got experience. We know what we got, and we're physical. So I like our chances.
Tim.
Hey, Pete. From your perspective, I guess, what has these first few days of going through the testing process been like? How have you seen it all be handled? And then when you get on the field this week, what is the conditioning going to look like for these guys as you start to ramp up?
Okay, it's been a really different process. This is not like any other start to any camp we've ever been around. The call for patience is like, it's ridiculous. It could be, we get to this point, we miss the off season, the physical part of it on the field and in the complex here and all of that. So we're so raring to go, and yet we can't start. The whole first week was really quarantine. Week two now is the ramp up period. And so we're still not there. We really won't get to practice like we want to practice until our third day on the field. It's like Thursday the 14th or something like that. So we're so far away from ever even getting to that point, because what we're doing right now is really to take the place of the off-season work that we would have had on the field. And so that's why we're ramping up, and the league has given us a structure that we can follow, that we need to be very disciplined about how we do this. And one, find out where our guys are conditioning-wise. So today was the first day. And we only have half the team. Then we'll have the other half the team out there in the afternoon to just see where we are. And it's really about individual evaluations. And then we'll make a collective decision, too, on where we are. And then we'll go from there. So this is just a unique time. There's nothing like it. We're going to put together a camp that's going to take us right to the opening game, and away we go. Like I've said to you guys in the past, I don't feel uncomfortable with that, because we just came out of the 9 years at SC where your first game is you're playing for the national championship, because if you don't win that game, you may be out of it. And so it's the same thought and the same approach. And so we'll try to do a really good job with a really clear sight on how we're going about it. But right now we're just starting the process of finding out the physical aspect of where our team is, and I can't tell you, I don't know anything about that yet. Everybody is charged up and ready to go. They have done everything exactly the way we had hoped to get this thing started. The first week was all but perfect for us, and everybody paying attention and getting going. But we have a whole nother week that's transitional, and so not until, like I said, the 14th or so will we really we'll start camp. We'll start training camp officially, and it'll feel like football for the first time then. So wait and see.
Bob.
Yeah, Pete, what is going to be the biggest challenge of not having preseason games? Are you going to have to work some more, like, contact periods into practices and things like that?
Yes, we will. Bob, it's important that we have to catch up physically, you know, with the things that you could get accomplished in the four games. Not all the players, some of the young players played a lot in all four of those games, but the starters did not. And so we would ramp up their play and try to get them by, you know, where they could play three quarters of a game before they would take the fourth game and basically take that game and let the young guys play. We have to make that time up and the physical part of the game come to life here on the practice field. We will have a couple events in the stadium. We're going to have a couple game-like events on the 22nd and the 26th of the month to really play it all out and get us in the mode. We will be playing with more opportunities for physical stuff to be done here rather than in the games, and we'll have to take care of all that. So, but it's all designed in the process that we go through.
Okay, just one more quick one. Rashad Penny, what is the situation going to be right now?
He's coming in on Thursday. We didn't think we needed to rush him in because he's still rehabbing and coming back. He'll come in Thursday for Friday, and he'll start his process of reconnecting with us on Friday. We just thought it would be better. He missed a week in transition that we didn't want to, because he would have had to sit around the days right here, right now. We'd like to go ahead and hopefully we made a good decision there. We're anxious to get him back. He's working out really hard. The reports are really strong that he's doing well. But we have not had him in our building for a while now, so this will be our first chance.
Great. Thank you.
Greg?
Coach, I think you're one of a half dozen teams that have not had anybody on the COVID-19 list. What do you attribute that to, and do you feel more confident now than you did maybe a week ago that you're going to have a season?
Well, we're really pleased with the start. Really, absolutely pleased that we did everything we could have done in the quarantine week. And there's a lot that goes into that. It was trying to win the week, really. And so we competed our way through it. And I feel like we did that. As far as moving forward, what's happening right now, Greg, is we're trying to get everything in motion so that we can operate at a really high level of taking care of our guys. We don't want to leave any stone unturned of what it takes to make sure our guys are safe. They're smart about what's going on. They're respectful of every aspect of the process. This calls on a whole mentality that needs to take a step forward in terms of accountability and responsibility and respect for one another, to the fullest extent. So, as far as projecting and what that's going to mean, I don't know. But we're going to try to kick ass in every aspect of this thing. And we're attacking it with a really clear discussion and open dialogue about what it takes and what we need to do and hopefully our guys will be really educated to be at our best to carry this challenge out. And then what that means, I don't know. I don't know. We're just going to go one day at a time and keep putting one day, and one foot forward and keep marching and see how this goes. Nobody's playing football, Nobody's tried this out. We're experimenting with this, with the process, and see how the game fits with the interactions and what it means in terms of controlling the spread of this, the infection. We'll just have to wait and see. I can't tell you what's going to happen, but I'm optimistic that we're doing everything we can, and I love the leadership on this team continuing to send the message to the guys, because I really feel like more than ever the leadership of your locker room is going to be more meaningful and more instrumental in our success. I mean, it's always crucially important, but now shoot more than ever. We, in essence, we don't bubble like the NBA did or like the NHL did in the same fashion, but don't think for a second that we aren't in a bubble. We are, and that bubble is the conscience that we can hold. Always protect the team. Rule number one is in effect, and it's crucial we do a great job with this, so we'll see how it goes.
And then quickly, do you anticipate the league, have you thought much about the league reinstating Josh Gordon? Is there a place for him on your team for him?
It's really not, this again, it's not in our hands. Josh did a really good job with us last year. He fit in really well. He was part of this team. And by the way, we opened and embraced, his coming to us, but also by the way he attacked it. So we are very open to that thought, and we'll see what happens. I don't know. I can't tell you what's going to happen on that.
Thank you.
Michael Sean.
Hey, Pete, have you had any conversations with guys about opting out, and do you anticipate anyone doing that on your team before anyone other than Chance, obviously, before the deadline comes?
Yeah, our coaches have we spent the first 2 days that we were here talking to our players just about their own situation and giving them an opportunity to, ask their questions and to share what's going on in their world and their view with our coaches, hopefully, doing a nice job. We wanted it on a more intimate situation when guys were talking about that stuff, so that's how we broke it down. I haven't heard. There has been some, you know, some guys asking questions specifically about it and all of that, and we've tried to answer the questions and you know, make come to a clear understanding. I support whatever guys got to do. I'm in support of them, and so far I don't have any information about that more than that.
Second one, really quick. If Jordan Brooks was to be a starter, where would that be? Like, what's his fastest path to a starting job as rookie year?
Well, I think the spot that makes sense to us at this point, he could play either outside. He could play all three spots at linebacker. He's physically capable, and I've seen enough film of him. I mean, there's a lot of film of him playing all different spots. So I know in his background, any college guy that came to us, you know, you would love to see what we've seen in him. He started for 4 years, and he's had thousands of snaps. So the flexibility is there. I think his clearest path would be, and the most obvious path would be at the Will Backer spot. We'll see how that goes. We'll start him there and then see how fast he can grasp it and how soon he can become comfortable, and we'll see. And we have tremendous flexibility in our guys. Our guys have been here for a long time in our program with Bruce coming back and KJ and Bobby. It's a fantastic group of guys. We've got a lot of options and plan here to weigh up, but we got to see how it goes. And that's why this goes back to competition, and we'll see how it all plays itself out. KJ's been a fantastic player, might have had his best year for us last year. Bobby's at the top of his game, and we're thrilled to have Bruce back. But that doesn't mean, you know, that all those guys don't play at the same time, you know, and all four of those guys are on the field at the same time. There's options for how we can do that we've worked out, and the competition will settle it. I'm not concerned about it at all. The competition will tell us what we need to do here, and because the options are all there for us.
Thanks, Pete.
And I think Ashley Ruiz is Omar Ruiz.
Yeah, that's me. Thanks,
good,
Dave.
Omar.
Hey, Pete, just for clarity, Rashad's going to get to town Thursday to start his testing process. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, he gets in on Thursday. I think it really actually begins on Friday, but he's traveling in Thursday.
Okay, and then my other question is, you know, in the offseason, offensive players can get together, throw routes, work on timing and stuff like that. How do you bring along a defense to come together and, you know, maybe form that chemistry and continuity? You know, maybe especially in this kind of training camp where it is different.
Yeah, you don't have the same, you know, the same opportunity. The throw and catching thing, which Russell is famous for, and he worked out with guys all summer. And he was busy the whole time, processing guys and growing with guys and creating the chemistry and the mentality and the communications and all that. And he worked out with all of the guys that were, you know, that are coming back that we hope to see playing a lot. The defense doesn't have that chance, so they do it, you know, in their workouts. They get together when they can, and it's just not the same process. So the offense will come in, like when today they'll throw routes for the first time, but they'll look pretty sharp today because they have spent some time. Defense is a little farther behind in that regard, but then again, defense catches up really quickly too. So, in the old days, we played a lot of hoops.
Of course, it's Pete Carroll. Played hoops. All right, Pete Carroll's Zoom conference call there. Halftime show coming up next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the halftime show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The halftime show, it's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
All right, a lot going on today. We got the Mariners over the weekend. We got Pete Carroll's presser you just heard there for about 15 minutes. And this Pac-12 story, which we'll start with, guys. Pac-12 players saying that they'll opt out if certain conditions are not met, up to and including full transparency regarding COVID, social justice issues, financial issues and revenue splitting, and there was one other. Stacey, you can tell me what that is right now when you give me your opinion on this issue.
Okay. Oh, right now. With all the player requirements.
Now.
Oh, gosh.
We're on the air.
I know. Sorry. I think you covered all of them. Another big part was the social justice aspects where they wanted 2% of conference revenue to be directed to players in support of financial aid for low-income black students, and then they had separate stuff specifically for underrepresented groups.
So the question is their approach the right approach to go to walk in there I mean, figuratively walk in there and say, if we don't get this stuff, we ain't playing. What do you think?
Well, I think first off that I think that they are asking for a lot, and I don't know what they're expecting to get out of this. I definitely agree with COVID that they should, you know, ask for better precautions, that they should ask for better transparency in the screening process. The university's asking them or essentially forcing them to sign liability waivers to me is a little sketchy. But when you roll out a financial compensation plan as big as they are, 50-50 revenue split, all these things, I know it's a negotiating tactic. I know it's not the final number, but they are asking for an awful lot in a short amount of time. And the only way this works, and I don't think it works at all, is if the star players who have the most to risk are willing to stand up and are willing to opt out of the season. If not, then this isn't going to work whatsoever.
I think it could work in that it gets a conversation going because there's a lot of focus on it right now, particularly since I know that some of the big leagues have started back up, but we're still a pretty, empty landscape of sports news, and this is very timely. I think that there perhaps is like no better time to push the conversation forward. And one thing I will say, and I know that O'Bannon versus the NCAA was more about names, images, and likeness, which I know we all agree with, but trying to go through the court system to get something done took over a decade to do. So even if this step forward that the students are making isn't one that is going to get done in the next 2 months, I think you have to be pretty radical with the changes that you're proposing to get anything done at all, unless you want to wait 10 years.
I'll agree with that part of it. I think that just to make a symbolic stand is enough, even if they're not going to get all this stuff in the span of a month. I think full transparency with regard to COVID and things like medical coverage, wanting to know what's going on with that, they're owed that today, yesterday maybe. But when it comes to the other stuff, it can wait. But Stacey, you're right. They got to get the ball rolling sometime. Why shouldn't it be now? Next. Mariners dropped 2 of 3, but they looked a bit better doing it than they did against Houston. And I keep skipping over that Angels series, like when I talk about like what they've done so far. The Angels series was a bit better, obviously. But the pitching came up pretty big. Taijuan Walker, Yusei Kikuchi, Marco Gonzalez, Kendall Graveman. Pretty fine performances from those guys. Certainly better than just making it into the fourth and then getting yanked out of there. So you feeling more confident going forward, guys? What do you think, Stacey?
Absolutely. I mean, there's still plenty of areas to improve. You saw a little bit of a drop-off on offense, which was a shame because you had great performances from your pitchers. So you really just needed one or two extra runs to win either of those games. But I think overall it was really, really encouraging, particularly that performance from Taijuan Walker. And I know that everyone always points to Kyle Lewis as being like maybe even the one thing they're excited about. I have a couple things I think are positive, but Kyle Lewis is one of them. And honestly, it's okay because he's still good. He kept that hit streak going, had a home run the other day, and I think it's good to be excited about someone, excited about a Mariners player. And I'm okay if the only person right now for some fans is Kyle Lewis because he's great.
Well, yes, Kyle Lewis is great, and he is a superstar. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, how long he can keep this up and how long he can keep going because he is playing at an all-time high. But, yeah, it was very encouraging to see the starting pitching take a turn the second time around. Now let's see if they can round it out with Justice Sheffield and Justin Dunn being able to finish out strong pitching performances. That would absolutely make me more positive and happy compared to the first weekend of baseball we watched from the Mariners. But it'll be interesting to watch the ebbs and flows of their bats in terms of these young players trying to figure out how to become effective hitters in this league.
Regarding Kyle Lewis's 10-game hit streak, I don't think anybody thinks he's going to catch Joe DiMaggio's 56-game
hit streak.
You say
that now.
But just to put... Yeah.
It's possible.
But just to put that record into perspective, you'd essentially have to hit an every game
yes.
of this season. to break that record. I mean, 57 games, which is essentially 60. But that just goes to show you, like, some people think that record is unbreakable. I actually disagree. I don't think that there's any external circumstance that would keep a guy from being able to do it. It's just really hard. It's just a really, really hard
one to
do.
It's as close to unbreakable as you can get.
Right. Like, there's other records, like Cy Young won 511 games. That's never going to happen again because guys don't get wins at the rate that they used to. They don't start 50 games a year. Mm-hmm. They don't pitch for 30 years. That's just never going to happen again. But 56 straight games, theoretically, you could do it. There's nothing preventing you from doing it other than your own ability. All right, next. Pete Carroll just speaking with the media there a few minutes ago. A couple things to take away. Talking about Jamal Adams and how they're going to use him. He did name Marquise Blair, though, guys, right off the top as the guy who's they're trying to figure out whether he works in the nickel position. What did you make of that, Jake?
Well, what I made of that is it's going to be interesting to see if they want him to play the nickel position in the traditional sense, because there are ways to effectively have three safeties on the field. It's by playing zone coverage. It's by playing matchups. And if you want him to play straight up nickel, no matter who he's lining up against, like you saw Justin Coleman and any of the great nickels that you saw a part of the Seahawks defense, I think that's a pretty tough task to ask Marquise Blair to do, but I think there's ways around that, and we'll see how they're able to work and fit him in, because honestly, guys, when you look at this from a pure personnel standpoint, who are the best three defensive backs? I mean, Shaquille Griffin's a part of that conversation, but what's more beneficial to them? It's trying to find a way to get Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs, and Marquise Blair on the field at the same time. I think that would be most advantageous to them. Now let's see if Marquise Blair can answer the call.
Yeah, it was interesting because the entire offseason we've been talking about, obviously this is before Jamal Adams, we'd been talking about it being Ugo Amadi's job to lose, and now it looks like he's in a pretty stiff competition with Marquise Blair, with Marquise Blair potentially even having the upper hand here, not just because of the draft capital the Seahawks have invested in him, but because he was good enough that they like have started him for a game or two.
We'll come back to more of what Pete Carroll said later in the program, probably around 2:30 when we do NFL headlines, maybe in four down territory as well. Coming up next, the timeline. One superstar wide receiver says, you know what, if we don't have an NFL season, I wouldn't really mind it. And I don't blame him. 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is The Timeline
with Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Get this started in the NFL with the timeline. We'll read you all the stories you're going to see on your own timelines. If you see any you want us to include, go ahead and tag us at Stacey Rost, at JT Heaps 9, at Tom Wassel. Tom, one of your favorites, Odell Beckham Jr., did an interview with the Wall Street Journal where he said he's prepared for an NFL season not to happen and honestly wouldn't mind it. Now, so there was that interview that drew a lot of attention, and that was very recently published. This is the exact quote. I just feel like the season shouldn't happen, and I'm prepared for it not to not happen, and I wouldn't mind not having it. So that kind of obviously drew up a lot of, I don't want to say criticism, but a lot of talking, right? Because you're talking about a star that's saying this about the league. So not only do people have fears about the league not starting, but then you also have people wondering if he's going to opt out. But a separate Browns reporter, Mary Kay Cabot, said that the interview was done 2 weeks prior to when Beckham saw the Browns facility. So he has no plans to opt out, according to several of her sources. So it's not a conflicting report, but I don't know that Odell Beckham Jr. is someone who did this interview and now he's going to opt out. But I think it's very eye-opening to hear an NFL player say this.
Well, what I'm reading from it, and by the way, I think I would say the same thing. It sounds like he's saying, I don't want to opt out. I'd rather have the choice made for me if there's no NFL season. Like, that would just, it would simplify me having to opt out, and I'd be more comfortable for my own, or with my own health, not having to risk it by reporting to an NFL facility and, you know, playing football. I mean, I completely get where he's coming from here. If somebody came to me and said, if I were already uncomfortable and like going back and forth, should I play, should I not? Should I play, should I not? And then somebody comes to me and says, you're not playing, there's no season. All right, well, the problem solved right there. Now I don't have to worry about making the choice myself and seeing my teammates play while I've opted out. I mean, that's how I read that. What about you, Jake?
Yeah, I read it very much the same way. Now, I know a lot of people were joking around about his comments and saying, oh, man, wouldn't it be nice to be Odell Beckham Jr. and to have millions of dollars and not worry about whether I would play or have a job this year? I think that this is something that I think a lot of people are having discussions in their own homes as to what they should do, what they should not do, and going back and forth every single day on certain things. I know in our household we have, you know, in terms of some days we feel more optimistic than others, and you just kind of go back and forth. It's a difficult thing to kind of maneuver and manage, but I think for Odell, it's a difficult issue. And Stacey, you know, I think with Odell quickly turning around, right? I think that that's an interesting aspect of this conversation.
It is, because it points to, well, how might players feel who were considering opting out when they show up to facilities? I mean, we didn't air this part of Pete Carroll's press conference because we were just up against the clock. But Carroll went on to talk about how the Seahawks are trying to be a model for, they hope to be a model for how to handle this. And they're going to be very safe and very particular with this. And so I think that there are some players that are going to feel one way and then show up to the facility and decide against opting out just because they feel more safe. I mean, I'm not saying that's going to happen to every player, but it's happened to at least one with Odell Beckham Jr. So I'm looking at that as encouraging.
Yeah, and also you got to look at this as free agents as well. I mean, Jadeveon Clowney, Everson Griffin, there's a lot of defensive tackles that like Snacks Harrison. He said that, hey, I have multiple offers on the table from different teams, but I'm trying to make a decision as to if this is the best decision for my health and my family, having a newborn son, all those things factor in. So if those players also see that the NFL is effectively handling the issue, or that certain teams are handling the issue very well, I think that could be positive in terms of the Seahawks getting a chance to land a future, you know, free agent that's out there in the market still.
Question, if yeah. you're a free agent right now and you opt out, are you a free agent again next year? Or does somebody, like,
yeah.
I guess you would be,
yes.
right? Somebody
yes,
can just pick
because
you up.
Correct, because essentially you're not obligated to any contract. You're just saying, hey, I'm just not going to play this year. I'm sitting this year out.
Right,
so
okay.
it would be the easiest place for them to be in terms of opting out at this point. But also, if you're a free agent who's been trying to figure this thing out, maybe it's on the better side of caution to wait a week or two as everybody's starting to come into the building to figure out what exactly you want to do and how positive or negative, for that matter, are things looking.
Heading to New York with the MLB, there was a lot of chaos around Yoenis Cespedes' decision to opt out, primarily because it sounded at first to a lot of people like he just suddenly disappeared. It was the weirdest story for a little bit there. So this is specifically from CNN, but it's all over the place. They said he didn't report to the ballpark for Sunday's game against Atlanta. So then security sent by team management to the Mets hotel found no trace of him or his belongings. So they show up and he's just completely gone. So they are currently, according to the first version of this story, unaware of his decision not to play the rest of the season, and presumably found this out during the game. So there's some new information coming out today, primarily because of interviews with teammates. But this from Anthony DiComo. Brandon Nimmo says he and his Mets teammates heard that Yoenis Cespedes' agents actually informed the Mets he was opting out before Sunday's game. He also heard the Mets official story that the team was blindsided during the game, and he said he doesn't know which is true. So now you've got two conflicting stories. One where the Mets say, we were blindsided, we showed up to his hotel after he didn't report and he was gone, and another from Cespedes' agent that says, we actually told you about this.
There's another part of this, too, where this is from the New York Post, where evidently Cespedes confronted Mets officials. I'm just reading from the article. He was concerned about his playing time and that he would be kept out of lineups to prevent him from reaching lucrative performance bonuses. So he was already upset with the Mets to begin with. And then all of a sudden, he just disappeared here. I mean, it is the Mets, okay? They're known for this type of stuff. But then again, it's Yoenis Cespedes. And he's bounced around from team to team to team to team with all the talent in the world. I'm always... Guys like that always worry me. Brandon Cooks, Yoenis Cespedes, whoever. Guys who are ultra-talented, who bounce around for one reason or another. I'm not sure if it's a question of whose side do you take on this necessarily, but I get the feeling the Mets are happy to be done with this.
I'm sure they are. It's just so weird.
Next story here is one we've already talked about, but I want to revisit it right before we break. The Rock is a part of the group that has bought the XFL for $15 million. So the XFL...
What the XFL is cooking!
Just had to get that in there.
Yeah, no problem. I can totally understand it. So for now, the XFL is being kept alive thanks to Dwayne Johnson. I call him Dwayne Johnson or Dwayne. We're on a first name basis. I see him as the actor, not necessarily the wrestling personality. To me, he's always actor first. But I guess I don't have an appreciation for wrestling the way that you do, Curtis.
Curtis, was The Rock a good wrestler with regard to like work rate? Like,
oh,
could
yeah.
he do a, you know, could he do like a superplex off the top rope, or was he just like Hogan in there?
Give you the people's elbow. He was a good worker. He was not anywhere near a superstar when he first came out. So, he worked
Rocky
his way
by
up.
Via.
Yeah. Where he had a very different getup, and then all of a sudden he dropped a good portion of that name and just came out as The Rock and killed it forever.
I'll say this for anybody who's even going to attempt to put together like a side league XFL, AAF, or whatever. I don't know if it's going to succeed, period, but I don't think that it can be the side project of a wealthy person, whether it's Vince McMahon, The Rock, whoever, Donald Trump, when they were trying to do the USFL back in the day. I just don't think it's going to work that way. I think you need somebody who's extremely wealthy, who can focus all of their energy and make it their primary project to make it work. Otherwise, eventually it's going to go by the wayside because that person's just not going to care about it enough. When it comes time for them to have to sell off assets for some unrelated reason, that'll be the first thing to go.
Well, Tom, I will say this. I do agree with you, and history is on your side. That is for sure. If there's anybody that could overcome the odds, I would not count out Dwayne The Rock Johnson. He's been successful in everything that he's done so far, and I know he's got an incredible uphill battle to climb. But the one aspect that I truly like about this, and the reason why I think he got into this, is because he was a former player himself. You got to remember his roots, his background, that he was a former college player at the University of Miami and was cut from the CFL. And he did not have a place like the XFL to try and grow his game and give himself another chance. So I think this one is very near and dear to his heart. And I think he'll have some extra motivation to try and pull this off. So this will obviously be very interesting to watch. But I think that, Tom, you're right to be pessimistic in this situation. But I'm hopeful The Rock can be the guy that pulls this off.
It just seems like such a slog. If you're The Rock, like, you've got so many like productive interests, movies. Plus, you can just, you know, live your life lavishly. Why would you want to get? I mean, I know I heard the reason you said there, Jake, but like, it just seems like such an arduous task trying to start up doing something that nobody else could do. Like, I just don't see the fun in it, personally, but that's me. I don't have that kind of cash. All right, Shannon Dreyer's coming up next. The good and the bad from the Mariners from over the weekend. Are we headed in the right direction? 710 ESPN Seattle.